KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
El Cerrito.
Union Square.
San Francisco.
South of Market.
From Albany.
Hayes Valley.
Rock Ridge in Oakland.
I'm from the Civic Center. I live across the street.
Coming up, San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo talks about his plan to tackle the issue of homelessness in the South Bay.
This is the challenge of our generation. This is the ethical challenge of our generation. And two decades from now, our children, grandchildren will be asking us, what did we do about this challenge?
Plus, we'll hear from other stakeholders.
How do you expect somebody to get into a living wage earning job when they don't have the skills to get into that job?
What should the Bay Area do for people living without homes? We'll hear different perspectives today on a special edition of Cross Currents. Stay with us. California is a state with nearly unequaled prosperity and poverty. Nearly a quarter of all homeless people in the entire United States live in this state. And in Santa Clara County, where several of the world's wealthiest companies do their work, nearly 10,000 people live without housing. That's according to a point-in-time count from January. And the number is rising. In just 2 years, more than 2,300 more people in the county are homeless. Every year, the San Francisco Chronicle coordinates coverage of homelessness with media outlets from around the Bay Area. As part of that, last week, Editor-in-Chief Audrey Cooper spoke with Mayor Sam Liccardo at the Cisco campus in San Jose. In partnership with the Chronicle, we've got a condensed version of that conversation to share with you now.
So let's talk about encampments. San Jose has had some pretty big ones.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of controversy about how the city has cleared some of them or how we've dealt with some of them. The number of people, according to the point-in-time count, people living in encampments increased by 177% over the last 2 years, and now a third of homeless people in the city live like this. So what is the city's official policy with regard to encampments?
Yeah, this is really controversial in our community, and we've often had very active debates in the city council about this, about whether we should simply sanction some encampments and allow people perhaps with access to water and basic services to continue to be encamped in different areas. My own position, and it has been the city's position for some time, has been, look, the cost of providing basic services to encampments, whether that's water and basic utilities and showers and security, among other things, is a lot of resources that are frankly wasted, not getting people housed. And as long as we're spinning our wheels, spending resources there, we're not spending resources doing what we know works and what we've seen so far. And just since 2015, with the city and the county and the housing authority, see Catherine Harris here, everybody working together to get more than 7,000 people permanently housed, and 92% of them are staying housed, which is a real solution. Spending a lot of resources on encampments is not going to actually move the needle on really addressing the crisis. Now, that being said, I think we have to some extent admitted defeat and recognizing the magnitude of the crisis is such that we may need to identify some locations where we're simply going to say, look, we're not going to clear these areas and we'll provide some, you know, basic ability for folks to be able to use restrooms and so forth, and we've asked our staff to go out and identify those sites. Now, here's the great challenge. Find the sites, because I guarantee you, in a city that's largely built out, largely a residential bedroom community for the rest of the valley, there is a neighborhood somewhere that is right next door. And those are very difficult conversations. I'm quite comfortable having the conversation that we're going to build a 200-unit apartment complex for homeless or formerly homeless individuals in or near your neighborhood, but try to explain to a group of parents, oh, we're going to allow an encampment to be there, and people are going to kind of come and go, and you know, we're not really sure what's going to happen, and good luck. You know, it's just not, as a city official, you take responsibility for public safety, for public health in your community, and those aren't easy conversations to have. I'd much rather spend that time talking about where we're going to build permanent housing for those same individuals and actually be able to show people we're actually pushing toward a solution rather than just pushing the problem on you.
But when the city clears an encampment, are there enough places for those people to go?
Reality, no. I mean, are there shelter spaces? Sometimes, yes. The truth is many homeless individuals don't want to go to shelters for lots of reasons. They may have pets. Often the shelters have rules around drug use or alcohol use, whatever it might be. The shelters are often viewed as being unsafe by many homeless people. And let's face it, this is a shelter for a few hours, and that's not much of a solution to somebody who knows and they have to go find a way to get their stuff and go somewhere else when 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning comes along. So, no, there's not enough shelters, but even if there were, I'm not sure that would address the problem, right? The problem is that if folks don't want to go there, the shelters probably aren't going to be the solution.
What do you have plans to build more shelters, and will they look any different? And you know, how do you address all the concerns that homeless people have, which I think many of them are legitimate?
Sure.
Of course, encampments also can be very unsafe places for people too.
Extremely.
Think the last statistic I saw said something like 4 out of 5 women in encampments have been raped there, and it's probably 5 out of 5, and the other ones just don't admit it.
It is a horrific way to live.
So what can you do to build more shelters, or should we even be going that direction?
There's no question there's a place for shelters. You know, we do need low barriers to access, places where people can go to be safe for a night. And we're looking now, we're hopeful very soon we'll be able to announce we've got a site to build a navigation center, similar to what San Francisco has pioneered. And the idea is to have a low barriers to entry location where we can have a lot of services, get a lot of beds, 200 to 300, and be able to move people off the street, hopefully being able to move many more of them to permanent housing than what you see nationwide with shelters, where less than 20% of shelter visitors actually get on to permanent housing. And so that's the real challenge. We know there's a need for those intermediate solutions. That's why we're building tiny homes, for example. We know it's really brutally hard for folks, even if they have a voucher, even if they have a job, to be able to find the open apartment for 3 to 6 months, and so we need those temporary solutions. But we have to build those solutions with the end in mind, and the end in mind needs to be permanent housing.
So there's a debate that's happening nationally about a so-called right to shelter and right to shelter ordinances. Where do you come down on that?
The reality is, it's more than just a question of whether or not someone's gonna have a place to sleep at night. As we all know, homelessness has a lot of different dimensions. We used to have mental hospitals in the state of California. And Lord knows there were plenty of problems with that. You know, I saw One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest too. There were plenty of abuses in that system. But we eliminate mental hospitals, and you can't tell me we're doing a very good job with mental health out on the street. We're just not, and it's a failure in every city in this state. And simply building shelters and declaring a right to shelter doesn't address that central issue.
Well, so let's talk about mental health. Something like 42% of homeless people in Santa Clara County say they have an issue with mental health. What can we do to better address those people?
Yeah, and certainly not my area of expertise, because outside of San Francisco, you know, there's a division of labor in the city. We do the building and so forth, and the counties tend to do the mental health. I would like to see Laura's Law adopted here. I'd like to see it adopted in counties throughout the state. I'd like to see what we saw last year with Scott Wiener's legislation that would enable more use of conservatorship. I'd like to see that expanded, and I'd like to be able to do that here. I think the reality we have in the city of San Jose is when someone is having a mental health episode and they're urinating in the middle of the street and screaming at traffic, they are going to be encountered by somebody with a badge and a gun. And that's the wrong encounter, right? That is never going to go well. And although we do a lot of work to ensure our police officers have CIT training, and you know, our chief has been really progressive on this and making sure that we are de-escalating. But the reality is, I mean, we had 1 year, we had 6 officer-involved shootings, five of the shootings involved individuals with serious mental health issues were having a mental health episode. So it means you need a lot more mental health workers out there, and you need a mechanism for civilians, perhaps with police support, to be able to engage people to get them to treatment where they may not, that may not be their choice or first choice. And I know we take civil liberties very seriously in this state, and we should, as we should in this country, though we don't take it seriously enough in Washington, D.C., I'll be the first to say. But at some point, we have to let go of the rigidity of viewing the well-being of an individual solely through the lens of civil liberties. It seems to me that individual who is screaming at traffic and urinating in the middle of the street is not free simply because we say we're going to let him alone.
All right, so we have time for one last question, and I like it to be a little more upbeat.
Uplifting.
So,
God, I'm depressing the heck out of
everybody. No, it's good. So tell me at least one thing that you want everybody in this audience to do, and one thing that gives you hope.
Wow, okay, great.
That's
two questions. If you are not doing something today that is committing you in significant ways in time, treasure, talent to addressing the homeless crisis, I am hoping that you will find whatever that is that engages you and makes you passionate. And we would love to find a way to get you engaged in helping to tackle this crisis. This is the challenge of our generation. This is the ethical challenge of our generation. And two decades from now, our children, grandchildren will be asking us, what did we do about this challenge? And if we don't have a good answer for them, I don't think either they or we will judge ourselves very well. So I think it's on each one of us. With regard to what gives me hope, I'll tell you one thing that gives me hope. There are lots of things that give me hope, but we launched an employment program that with a couple of partners, Downtown Streets Team and Goodwill, last year to get a few dozen homeless individuals working, cleaning up our streets, cleaning up public spaces, and then they would benefit from job training through Downtown Streets Team and placement and so forth at Goodwill. And we have seen incredible success already. And I was just talking to one of the managers of the teams over at Goodwill, who talked about how six people have already, on his particular crew, had already gotten full-time jobs, and talked about one gentleman, his name was Luis, who said it absolutely transformed him, that it was just the fact that someone thought he could be useful in a community was what inspired him to be clean and sober, to be working now full time on a Caltrans crew, and now he's made contact again with his daughter and he's rebuilding his life. And I thought that was incredibly inspiring to me, that just the ability to create a path for someone to believe that they could be part of our community again. You know, we live in a time of such deep isolation and alienation. And of course, the events of the last 2 weeks demonstrated in spades, you know, how a 19-year-old goes and gets a semi-automatic rifle, and get on another subject. But it seems to me that the most despairing dimension of homelessness is the fact that people feel so completely alienated from other human beings. And to the extent that we can help folks believe that they're once again part of the community, that, it seems to me, can be an incredible catalyst for change.
That's San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo speaking with Audrey Cooper at a public forum recorded last week in San Jose. It's part of the San Francisco Chronicle Talks Homelessness with support from Cisco. We heard part of their conversation. You can hear the rest at KALW.org. Later in the event, Chronicle reporter Kevin Fagan continued the conversation with additional guests: Destination Home CEO Jennifer Loving, Santa Clara Supervisor Cindy Chavez, and City Team's Claudine Cipilli. Here's a condensed version of that discussion.
So what I'd like to talk about first is the fact that there are different types of homeless people. It's not just the guy sitting on the street shooting up in his neck. under a blanket. It's a whole strata of different kinds of people experiencing this crisis. You have the chronically homeless people, you have people in the middle who are in shelters for quite some time, and then you have people who bounce through and self-resolve, as they say. Jen, you've had a lot of experience. Talk to me about what people don't know about different kinds of homeless people.
I think, we can talk about subpopulations of who encounters homelessness, right? And talk about veterans, or you can talk about families. But what's really, I think, important to talk about is disproportionality. You know, homelessness is part of, this racist system that we have, whether it's equity, housing equity, or access to jobs, or education, or income inequality, or what, right? So what we really have is a disproportionate amount of people of color who enter into homelessness, sometimes as high as 8-1, 7-1. And so I think that's something that we don't always equate. For some reason, when it comes to homelessness, we want to figure out what the person did to do something wrong, when we don't look at how structurally unfair this country is and how we do not all have the same opportunities. So that's how I think about it.
Well, yeah. And so what that does is it means there are people experience homelessness with different sets of needs. Supportive housing, for one. Supportive housing is crucial for chronically homeless people in particular. Not everyone needs supportive housing. Mm-hmm. That's housing where you have a complex or have a series of units, and then you surround people with counseling. Some people just don't need. Some people have the homeless prevention program that you run, where they can get caught before they even pitch in. But Cindy, you've done a lot of advocacy for supportive housing. Tell me, why did it take so long for supportive housing to catch on here?
Just to be frank, we don't have a magic bullet. Like, we've got some great things that we're doing, but we've got much more that needs to be done. What I would say is that I think that it really does have a lot to do with equity, which is that as a society and a community, we don't invest in the needs of the poor. And if you think about it, if you make minimum wage in this state, what are you making a year? You are extremely low income, mm-hmm. if you are full time and make minimum wage. And so in many respects, we don't have the wages people need. We don't create opportunities. And in this nation, we actually used early on in our early HUD days, we used public dollars to build middle income housing, yeah. not extremely low income housing. And just to make one other point, a housing unit costs about $600,000 to build. If we're building an extremely low-income housing, that means that there's much less rent and much less, it's the ability to pay it back is harder. So what it means is that we have to really fundamentally decide that we're going to prioritize the highest need people. And there's actually a really interesting point that I'll just say that at the county that we learned is that we were spending and still do approximately $520 million a year on people who are homeless, mm-hmm. in services, medical, jails, mental health services. So thinking about how we change the dynamic so that we're doing what is fundamentally economically right for human beings and right long-term means that we need to shift spending money on, really, frankly, keeping someone homeless and relatively healthy as they visit our hospitals, and really then maybe just sheltering them. I mean, it's kind of crazy if you think about $500 million a year. That's nuts. We should absolutely change the way we do that, and that's why I think it took so long.
Claudine, what do people who come into nonprofit that you work at, City Team, which does wonderful work with employment, what do people need most when they come in?
We see many faces of homelessness, going back to your original question. So a lot of the people that we see living in our homeless shelters or coming in and out of the homeless shelters, if there's vacancies in homeless shelters, they have jobs. I mean, these people, if you were to walk by them on the street or seen them in Safeway or something like that, you wouldn't know that they were homeless. They smell good because they have cologne on, And so these men that we're working with in our Mansbridge program that is housed in our homeless shelter, I mean, they make minimum wage, $15 an hour, or they're making $17 an hour and they just can't make that mark. They can't reach the threshold that would help them afford an apartment, let alone a room to share. I mean, have any of you looked into renting a room or getting a roommate or something like that? I mean, a one bedroom that you share a bathroom, you pay $1,100 or $1,200. I mean, that's insane, right? So our approach is that just like Cindy said just a moment ago, the economic is at the core of this, right? Mm. At the core of the homelessness crisis. And so everything that we do at City Team and our learning and career centers, that's where we focus on. We focus on employability of people, increasing their employability. And obviously, some people that are coming off the street that have been unsheltered for so long, they're gonna have skills gaps. Mm-hmm. How do you expect somebody to get into a living wage earning job when they don't have the skills to get into that job, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why education and training is so important to us. We see it as one of the keys to success, right? And our homeless shelters, we have one in Oakland and one in San Francisco and one in San Jose. Our homeless shelters are transitional housing programs. And then added to that are our residential men's and women's programs. We focus on providing not just a shelter over their head, because just as you heard the mayor earlier, just having a roof over somebody's head is not enough. They need services, and they need services that are targeted and services that are intentional and services that they really need.
What is the first thing you need when you come in? What is, in your experience, what is the first thing you need to come out of the shelter into housing?
Out of the shelter into housing. I really feel...
Because I just wanted to make the point that mm-hmm. I think everyone here agrees that the goal is to make shelter a short experience. Mm-hmm. You're going in a shelter, then you're going off to the housing.
I think having a support system is very important. I'll elaborate a little bit on that. Because when you're homeless, has anybody in here been homeless on the street, in and out of shelters, living in your car? When you are in that space, you kind of... Like, you don't mean to wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to be homeless today. No, that does not happen, right? But when you find yourself in it, then you figure out, holy crap, this is becoming more and more permanent by the day. And here's the thing that you start experiencing. You feel like you're in quicksand, right? Mm-hmm. So quicksand is just normal sand. It's not just some unique type of soil, right? So quicksand is just normal sand that is so saturated with water that when you find yourself in it, you try to move, it cannot support any weight. The more you move, the more you sink, yeah. Right? And that's what I experienced when I was in homelessness. It was like everything I tried to make, every move I tried to make, I felt like I was sinking lower and lower and lower. And nobody sees you. Nobody sees you. And then you start thinking that mm-hmm. you, when you're around normal humans that are housed, you get a sense of that the people that have homes that are around you are so very annoyed by your very presence, mm-hmm. right? And then you just get to a point where you just start thinking, you know what? I've had such a bad day, I don't give a damn what those people think, mm-hmm. right? And that's when, if you're out and about in the streets of San Francisco or down here in San Jose, and somebody acts out, that's probably the kind of day they are having. They are up to here, and they finally get to a place where they say, I don't care what anybody thinks of me, right? So I completely forgot what the question was about.
That's okay. I like that riff, because that gets...
support system. Thank you, dear. Thank you. I appreciate you. So having a support system. So when you're in that quicksand, you need something to grab a hold of that is stationary, that is there, right? That's not going to move itself. So then you can start to make these movements up and eventually lift yourself up out of this like whirlpool that keeps pushing you down. So those things that you can grab a hold of, that can be an agency, right? Like City Team. That could be a case manager. That could be that can be an AA sponsor, a spiritual mentor, somebody from church. Or, you know, one of the things that really mattered to me when I was going through it was when people looked me in the eye mm-hmm. and acknowledged my presence. Because there's a weird thing that happens when you get that, when somebody looks you in the eye. It's almost like this unspoken validation,
this unspoken acknowledgement from this person to that person that I see you and you matter and you're valuable and you're worthy, right? That is, I mean, we pass by people, I'm sure, every day on the street, or they're laying on the street and you just walk by and, you know, not even look them in the eye because you're afraid of what they might see in you or of what you might see in them. Right. So that support system and all those things. So that's what we become at City Team in our learning and career centers, is we become one of those stationary things that somebody could grab onto to help themselves up out of the muck, the mire that they're in.
That was a condensed version of a forum on homelessness held in San Jose. It's part of the San Francisco Chronicle Talks Homelessness with support from Cisco. You can hear that full panel discussion at our website, kalw.org. Today's Cross Currents engineers are Tariq Foda, Gabe Graben, and James Rollins. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our news director is Ben Trefney, and our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Thanks for listening. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.